Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This is truly an epic event that is raising awareness and revealing just how much is happening in the world of embodiment. And this gives me hope about where we're heading as a people. I'm Amara Pagano. I'm the founder of Azul, a conscious movement path of personal transformation. I work with the body and the power of movement to awaken love and consciousness. Embodiment is a key to my work. And the journey of embodying the map of Azul is what facilitates the process of self-realization. I'm excited to sponsor the Dance and Creativity Channel to share my love of movement and to celebrate the power that it has to serve our collective evolution. If you are interested in awakening your deepest potential or curious about the spiritual and healing aspects of embodiment, I encourage you to check out Azul. Everyone is welcome. I work with people who love movement and people who have never moved. Follow the link and you'll find three gifts for you: a 50-minute Azul journey, a special discount on our online embodiment training, and a free month in our upcoming membership program. So come, check out the Path of Azul. I'll be presenting on the main stage here and in the Dance and Creativity Channel, and I hope to see you there. For now, enjoy the richness of the presentation you're about to see.
Welcome to everyone who's coming into this session. This is the Embodied Poetry Panel. So here we have with us Dr. Bayo Akamalafi. He is the leader of the Emergence Network. And he's authored two books, We Will Tell Our Own Story and These Wilds Beyond Our Fences, Letters to Daughters on Humanity's Search for Hope. We also have Brooke McNamara, a poet, performer, teacher, and ordained Zen monk. Wow. Has published two books of poems, Bury the Seed and Feed Your Vows, and is co-director of Lewis Embodiment, an organization that offers performances and education programs. We have Fred Lamotte, who's author of three volumes of poetry, Wounded Bud, Savor Eternity One Moment at a Time, and The Fire of Darkness, What Burns Me Awake. I became. He is an interfaith college chaplain and instructor in world religions. And we have Rosemary Wotola-Troma, who has 13 poetry collections, most recently Hush, which was winner of the Halcyon Prize for Poems of Human Ecology, and Naked for Tea, a finalist for the Able Muse Book Award. She teaches poetry for addiction recovery programs, hospice, mindfulness retreats, women's retreats, and more. And she writes a poem a day on her blog, 100fallingveils.com. So welcome to all of you. We do have Dave Rock, who will be hopefully joining us at some point as well, so we'll watch out for him. Take it away, Brooke.
Okay, thank you so much, Jamie. And thank you, Rosemary, and Bio, and Fred, and Dave, however you're making your way here. I'm so happy each of you said yes. I got invited to create this panel, and I just really went for my, you know, the poets who have, you all have moved me. Your work has really moved me, and I've never met any of you in person yet, but I feel your words magically enter my body and my being and change me like magic spells. So I'm just really grateful and excited for this conversation. I feel like a kid in a candy shop, just getting to hear each of you and also hear you connect with each other, and then we'll get to have an open dialogue at the end. I'm just gonna offer some brief framing about what this conversation is. I also just want to welcome everyone who's here, whether in real time or after the fact. I'm here because poetry is an original way of being and perceiving and expressing myself on earth. And it just has saved me over and over, this way of feeling. Somehow it doesn't feel like my body is speaking when I'm writing poetry, but it feels like my body, mind, heart, soul. Remember that they're all one thing, not the same thing. They're all distinct dimensions of one thing, and when they attune, it feels like a symphony, of a quirky symphony in many cases, but it feels like many parts coming together to say something that's bigger than how I normally perceive myself. And that way of cohering and listening and expressing renews me really deeply, and makes me so happy to be alive. And so I feel any human has the capacity for that, for allowing that kind of coherence of our bodies and our minds and our hearts and our souls and the earth and space itself to all work together and say something. And I feel that that's what poetry is. So there's so much I could say, but I really want to hear from you all about, how does this happen for you, each of you? How do you, I'm sure it's not something that you do. Maybe there's some habits that you've found or some disciplines that you've worked for. But I've talked to Bio a little bit about this, and I've heard you say that it's almost like a possession or something that happens to you. And I'm just so curious to hear each of you describe, like, how do your poems come into form? And how is your body a part of that? And so before we have any more language, I'd like to invite all of us and anyone listening for a really brief, just grounding into our whole being. So feel free to close your eyes if you want, or just soften your gaze. And find a posture that's a little bit more awake and a little bit more relaxed than you have right now. So you might want to lengthen your spine. You may want to deepen your breath. You may want to bring your hands somewhere on your body, anywhere that wants a little bit of warmth or touch. And then sensing or imagining. This may feel accessible, or you may feel like you need to imagine it, but just imagining that your mind is filling your whole body. Your mind is your body. Your mind is spread throughout your body. And just feeling yourself very simply as a mind, body, breathing right now. Nothing more, nothing less. And as this mind, body, breathing right now, I want you to tune for the aspects of your body that are tangible, matter, fleshy, solid, at least in the sense that we normally perceive ourselves. We have muscle, bone, organs, skin, fluids, and just sense all of that tangible aspect of your body. And then also tune to the inherent innate space that is inside of and around and beyond, and also as your body. So our bodies as matter and space. And then this may feel a little unusual, but just tune to and feel for or imagine how our bodies are completely also made of stories and made of poems and made of voices from everything we've ever experienced and beyond. We're literally made up of stories, and just feel that. There's so much wanting and aching to speak or to just be silent. Feeling ourselves as a swirling matrix of stories and poems right here already. And then also how we are made of silence, and the silence is able to listen profoundly for what most needs to be said, most wants to be said. And then with all that, as a body-mind breathing, made of solid form as well as empty space, made of stories, poems, and silence, you can open your eyes and shift your attention. And I would love to invite Bio to speak first and just to share and explore anything that feels alive for you in terms of your creative process, how writing and poetry come to you through you.
Thank you, sister. And you're welcome. I greet my brothers, sisters, everyone listening and being here with us. I'm in India right now, and my family is just around the corner. My feet planted on this very nice rug that I really appreciate at this point in time. I think what I'd like to share is possibly unintelligible. The things that I would like to dive into cannot all be spoken into words. But I'll start out with a poem, just a short poem. I'm not even sure I should call this a poem. It's just some words slung together, dwelling together for the moment. It doesn't have a title as well. The God of the cotton plantation is woefully undone and incompetent in the face of the many upheavals we are witnessing. All he can promise is justice in the by and by. But justice in the by and by is the name of our shackles. And justice now, the balm on our ankles to make the shackles less angry, isn't more appealing. What we need is a wild dispersal, a theology of the discarded, a fugitive arrangement. We need to make like thieves and steal away in the dead of night to where Bacchus and Pan and Eshu dance with moss-covered stones, grief-inflected flutes, and palm oil-stained morsels of flesh, drawing their wine from the genius of cryptogamic civilizations and their phosphorus poetry from the blood of rectitude. I think I write at crossroads, which means that I think a lot about the myth of the writer, the myth of the agent who just spills words and meaning into the world that passively receives it, you know, which is the reason why in another conversation, Brooke, that we had, I talked about being possessed. So I write a lot about justice and the impossibility of justice and highways and why we need to think like crossroads in this time. And that is already beautifully connected with this idea of embodied poetry. I feel embodied poetry is noticing that we are not in charge of the words, you know. We are not in charge of meaning, that we are not central. And by we, I mean those of us bipedals that claim to be human, that claim to be separate Cartesian entities, external to the world, you know, sweltering in our internal subjectivity. So I think of embodied poetry as poetry paying attention. Writing that notices that it's not the one, that it is made by tables and computer screens and laptops, you know, things that we don't usually count as agential in the production of meaning, you know. So it's a very fugitive thing for me. Embodied poetry is fugitive. It's fugitive inquiry into meaning that is always becoming. It is dwelling with a world that exceeds us. I feel that when I write, I have to feel defeated in the moment that I write, or else it feels stale and same. So I long for a moment of defeat, where I feel that there are others in the room. It comes possibly in the moment of listening to music. I do well with music when I write. If there's no music, I don't think I could write. The bodies are different. It possibly won't work for anyone else or for many other people, but being slain makes me compostable. And being compostable allows the generativity for the unsaid to be spoken. I think my work is a desirous force. And I would even say it's my work, as if there's a stable entity called my or I, a sui generis that is hiding behind this facade of flesh and bone. I feel that my work then, just by way of speaking, is to be slain over and over again, to allow for the unsaid to be said, to allow for bodies, black bodies, female bodies, non-human bodies, ancestral bodies, to breathe and to thrive. And embodied poetry is the fugitive process that makes that happen. Yeah, I'll just stop there.
Beautiful, Bio. Thank you so much. And you're getting a lot of resonance in the chat. I'd love to pass it to you, Fred. If you want to respond or just share from your perspective.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Welcome.
Well, my body is here in the Puget Sound, so I have to acknowledge the place where I am and all the beautiful totem spirits that live here in their bodies and in the air. And so I welcome all of you into my body, and I know that I am being welcomed into your body. And I, through meditation, through walking in the forest, or just through being naturally probably ADD or something that was never diagnosed, my experience just drives me out of small identifications. And I see so many people today and in our politics just conflicted by these small identifications with concepts like nation and tribe and party and race. And you know what? Because the mind limits us to those concepts, we can't enjoy what they really are. It's the body that liberates us from the mind. And I find that when I'm totally in my body, through meditation, through a walk in the woods, through just throwing a fit with my dogs and wrestling, I get out of those concepts and I understand that the body is the place beyond all those small identifications. And I'm so tired of people telling me that I am not this body, coming from a head place that tells me I am not the body. Oh yes, I am, and so are you, and we are one body. And so with that, I'm going to share a poem. I'm going to share my ancestry. I am not ashamed of my ancestry. My DNA results came back, just as I suspected. My great-great-grandfather was a monarch butterfly. The greater part of me is still wriggling under a rock. I am part larva, but part hummingbird too. There is dinosaur tar in my bone marrow. My golden hair sprouted out of a meadow in Palestine. Genghis Khan is my fourth cousin, but I didn't get his dimples. My loins are loaded with banyan seeds from Sri Lanka, but I descended from Ravana, not Ram. My uncle is a mastodon, There are traces of white people in my saliva. 3.7 billion years ago, I swirled in a golden hydrogen cloud, dreaming of a planet overgrown with lingams and yonis. More recently, say 60,000 BC, I walked on hairy paws across a land bridge, joining Sweden to Botswana. I am the bastard of the sun and moon. I can no longer deny my heritage of raindrops and cougar scat. My mud was molded with your grandmother's tears. I was that brother from a rival tribe who marched you to the sea and sold you. I was the merchant from Savannah and the cargo of blackness. I was the chain. Admit it, you have wings, vast and golden, like mine, like mine. You have sweat, dark and salty, like mine, like mine. You have secrets, silently singing in your blood, like mine, like mine. Don't pretend that Earth is not one family. Don't pretend we never hung from the same branch. Don't pretend we do not ripen on each other's breath. Don't pretend we didn't come here to forgive. That's all I have.
Thank you, Fred. Amazing. I feel really moved. I don't know where Dave is, which I feel sad that he's not here, and I'm hoping he finds us. But with the possibility of a little bit more time, I'm drawn to just see bio, just to weave back to you for a moment and see if there's anything you'd want to respond to or share the impact, since you two have never met Fred and Bio and Rosemary as well. But I'm just curious how Fred's words impacted you.
Well, apparently we have. as Fred has rightly said, we're meeting and we've met many times before. We're old friends. We've met in battlefields. We've met in heavenly places. And the meeting is still ongoing. I've read that poem many times, Fred, and it's beautiful because it slays me, like I said. It undoes the categories with which we are compelled to think, you know, as modern subjects trying to find power, as if power or enchantment were in short supply, you know. And listening to that almost touches that fugitive invitation to come out, to spill open, you know, from the chrysalis to be touched in return. And to witness, not witness, but to witness an orgasmic universe that is too ripe, too promiscuous to fit neatly into words and categories and concepts. So thank you for that. And I feel it's a poem for these times.
Thank you. I'm amazed that you've read it before, so thank you.
Yes.
Well, and also maybe it's like you were saying, Bio, it's a wild dispersal, as you said in your poem, right? And it's almost that, you know, it has that energy to it that you were calling for too.
Yeah, I love that. I love that word withness, to be witness and withness. And I'm so moved by how true it feels that you've met and we've met. And maybe that's why I was so like uncomfortably excited today, like bursting. It felt like a reunion more than a first time meeting. So Rosemary, I would love to hear your voice.
Hi, friends.
Hi.
Brooke, Fred, Bio, such pleasure to be with you. All the friends who I haven't met yet, thanks for joining us. And I'm coming from southwestern Colorado in the United States, and it's full on fall here. I'm surrounded by gold, golden aspen, and the dark green of the spruce trees. And I thought I would start out, I had three things I was thinking about, and I thought I'd start out with a poem that in some ways speaks exactly to what Fred was talking about. He was saying, you know, we want to drive out these small identifications. And that is certainly what I was thinking about when I wrote this poem. And I'll start with it and then talk just a little bit about that, the embodiment of it. This is big. This is perhaps the year to learn to be big. Spruce tree big, cliffside big, big as mesa, big as mountain lake, big as in cosmos, as in love. Being small has never served me, constricting, contorting, trying to fit into someone else's room, into someone else's shoes, even to my own name. Let this be the year to escape all those little rules with their little shoulds, all those little cages with their little locks. It's time to make of myself a key. It's time to lean into immensity. It's time to supersize communion, time to grow beyond the self. It's time to do what the universe does, accelerate as I expand, not racing to the edges of something else, but changing the scale of space itself. This is the year to be big. That poem was written out of the same desperation, I think, that Fred was talking about, of needing to move past these small divisions that, and in a way also to acknowledge them, to acknowledge the divisions actually in our bodies, the way that we feel when we feel constricted, what it feels like to have that feeling in the body, and to lean into, like I said, lean into or to experience what it is then to release that, right? And to look around in the natural world and find all of the examples of what is leading us, what is guiding us, where can our bodies find the inspiration to do this spacious act? How do we learn from the world and unlearn from the mind? And get the mind on board with. And I think that poems are so helpful for this, that they take oppositions, in this case, small and big, and they really let them play at each other. We feel them in the body, and then I feel like the poem helps bring them out. And if we can heal some of the division in here, which is what poems do, they create the container for that wrestling. Or as Bayo was saying, that being slayed, right? Just to be diminished somehow to the point where we've been opened. That was one thing I've been thinking about. And I love how Bayo, you and Fred, how you've both spoken to that already. And then I was thinking also then, and if you were, as a prompt, if you were wanting to write a poem, an idea would be to take that first line, this is perhaps the year to be, and fill in the blank and aspire to that. What is it the year to be? And then look around you and see what in the world is teaching you in your body how to achieve this thing. And then the second idea I had was that poetry very specifically is a bridge between the world of thinking and the world of experience, and how poetry then allows us to link these two, as opposed to, you know, there's a big division about the brain and the body also, and how guess what? Luckily, we've got both. And so let's build that bridge. Poetry is so good at that. And this is an example, I suppose, of taking in of a feeling, in this case, grief, which Bayo was speaking about so beautifully earlier, grief, and finding a sensory experience for that. This poem is called "Watching My Friend Pretend Her Heart Isn't Breaking." Unearth, just one teaspoon of neutron star would weigh 6 billion tons. 6 billion tons is the equivalent of every animal on Earth, including the insects, times 3. 6 billion tons sounds impossible, until I consider what it is to swallow grief. Just one teaspoon, and one may as well have consumed a neutron star. How dense it is, how it carries in it the memory of collapse. How impossible to believe anything could ever lift that weight. There are many reasons to treat each other with great tenderness. One is the sheer miracle that we are together on a planet surrounded by dying stars. And the other is, none of us can see what anyone else has swallowed. If you've experienced grief, which I'm sure you have, then there is that weight to it. And poetry that's written experientially, right? With a longing, with a striving, with a leaning toward experience, helps to build that bridge between our ideas of how things are and our experience of how things are. And a way to do this in your own writing is to take any feeling, to take grief in this case, but you could take any feeling, love or intolerance or justice, as Bayo did, or communion, as Fred did, and to find something in the outer world, again, to build that bridge, to explore it through the body. And then the last thing I just wanted to say was that as much as it's about poetry, it isn't at all. That the poem isn't the point. It's just the happy byproduct of an experience. And that experience, as Bayo said so beautifully, is of being slayed, of somehow dropping off the layers of the self, becoming less obstacle and becoming more flow. Being in service to the poem is what I like to say. Letting the poem know more than we do. And in that respect, I feel like my best partner is silence. I love that Bayo said he has to have music to write. I have to have silence. And there's so many ways to do it right, right? There's so many ways to do it right. And one of them for me is to really allow myself, like Brooke was saying, to engage with the silence and then have a full body listening.
Yeah. So much yes to everything you said. Oh my God. So impacted by you. You're like, you're the real you. I feel like I just encountered the real you. Thank you for being so generous with your, the incredible instrument that you are of perceiving and expressing. And I totally agree that the poem is, it's an artifact of a something untouchable, unborn, ineffable, totally obvious. And it makes me think of that Leonard Cohen quote that, like, if your life is burning, well, poetry is just the ash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love where you took it. I love that you gave us yourself so fully and your poem, and then invited the listeners to, you know, one way that, because I'm sure a lot of people who are tuning in are poets or long for more more flow and less obstacle, like you just said. That's what I hear a lot from students and friends, is just like, there's so much I want to say, but how can I access it? And so I'm curious, Fred, Bio, Rosemary, like how, what would you offer to our listeners in terms of like, how do you get there? How do you get there to that place where you're experiencing, and then you can bridge it to your thoughts and find the right words? And yeah.
I'll just say very briefly that because of the beauty of the teachings of the teacher that gave me this wonderful, simple meditation, it is almost every morning that waking is waking to a completely new creation. Yesterday only exists in the mind. And then the first thing you do each morning, just as the first thing you did when you were born, is you breathe. You become conscious that you're breathing. Breath is not only the link between mind and body, but it's the bridge. So when you're hung up in those concepts that we need to use, if we're analyzing something practical, if we're using our intellect as an instrument, good. But to get out of intellectualizing life itself, which can never be intellectualized, it's like the ripple trying to understand what the ocean is. Just settle down and become the ocean. And you do that through the breath. Through the breath, the mind is led back into the body. Mm-hmm. It's the body that writes my poems. It's when I'm most real in awakening the numb places in my body, when I've fallen. I don't use so much the image of being slain, but falling. We are mm-hmm. fallen creatures, and that's our grace. And when we fall back into the body, mm-hmm. poetry is our very breath, and poems just come on the breath for me. That's all I'll say.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Fred. I was just, Rosemary, I was just going to say that, you know, when I turn up the volume on music, that's when it's most silent. That's when everything falls.
When the kids go to sleep.
That's when everything falls silent, you know.
Yeah. Power to the paradox, right?
It's when the kids fall asleep, I'm like, gosh, the silence is deafening. It's so beautiful.
Yes, the silence is deafening when the music is in my ears. I just want to add to tossing a pebble or two. And that is to say, to speak about moments when I feel stuck, you know, when the words aren't coming. Mm-hmm. I realize in those moments, the teachings of my Yoruba elders and indigenous cosmovisions that say, in order to find your way, you must become lost. And invite, basically, and this is me putting words to their ineffable invitations, that if you are seeking a road to take, look for the one with the obstacles. The obstacle is the rite of passage. I see stuckness as the world kicking back, as the body demanding to be held, you know, in partnership on the journey, you know, mm-hmm. into craftsmanship, into writing. The body will not just be, you know, carried along. It will not be made into a passive object. So I listen in that moment. I feel those are the interesting moments. When you're mm-hmm. stuck, that's mm-hmm. when things get really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so look for a place, you know. I look for places, not just music. I look for a place. I dwell with colors, you know. Those things, the world around us isn't just the background to our genius and creativity. We create with the world. We become with the world, with bodies, with materialities around us. So I feel that's the invitation. We hardly ever recognize it. You know, most of the time, the academic world is agog. It's all the rage for genius human subjects. But no, we have always been, you know, part of the fabric of becoming. That is too much for words, too much for human relationships. Mm-hmm. So stuckness is a gift. That is the portal opening in space-time, inviting you to sit down, stay with the trouble, slow down, listen, you know, move your body, you know, become fugitive, hide, if you will, and maybe, just maybe, words will sprout in that moment. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that old adage, what's in the way is the way. What's in the way is the way. And that's it's so simple, but so rich whatever I'm trying to get away from is the poem I need to write, or is the poem that eventually writes. The first poem I wrote for my first book was called Interruption, about being interrupted by my kids while trying to write. Or by my baby, like getting up early to write and then having him need me to come nurse him. And then the poem was about nursing him, which is nursing a baby is poetry. And I was like, oh my God, how did I miss that? Until that particular interruption woke me up. I wanna hear your response to them, Rosemary, but I also feel like I just want to say just a couple of little things in terms of Fred, you named your teacher, and then Bio, you named the elders in your Yoruba tradition. And I, as I'm stewing on like, what do I do when I'm stuck besides let the stuckness work me? And I also feel my spiritual lineage, which is in Zen. And I feel like my teacher, Diane Mitchell Hamilton Roshi, just the importance of vows, and that her teacher's teacher, Maizumi Roshi, when he was asked about like, what is the soul? He said, I don't know. I don't know what the soul is, but what I know continues is our vows. Mm-hmm. And so I have a short poem. I realize I haven't shared a poem yet. And I have a short one that feels like it's bubbling up and wanting to be said. And I feel like this is a way that I snuck my vow into my book. It's just two short stanzas. And this is kind of a way, I would say, this is for me, a demonstration of moving from being stuck to being entangled in a way, like not stuck and separate, but entangled and therefore free. I don't know how else to say that, but this poem is called Medicine. Our massive plastic brains watch the ice melting through our hot hands, the gyres turning their awful luminosity. I want to receive anyone willing in any condition and love them full bodied till we fall to pieces and rain down as God's broken heart nourishing the good earth. So,
pretty strong prayer.
it's like my way of saying the Bodhisattva vow, which is just to be of service. I just want to, and I think when we can locate our deepest or just most original vows in our own words, like that can reorient us. Or if thou feels too strong, then just intention, if that has a better ring. And like Fred said, oh my gosh, beautiful intention to breathe, to be breath, to be breathed. And then poetry will come, is my experience.
Uh-oh, did she freeze?
She's frozen slightly. I was just wondering if you guys wanted to answer any of the questions that were coming up.
Yeah.
We have had a few questions from people about the names of the poems and where they can find more. So maybe at the end we can do that. But there has been a question about whether there's any topics that you would not feel comfortable expressing through poetry.
I want to talk first just a little bit about blank and about process with stuckness. But Fred and Bea, do both of you want to maybe put your the titles of your poems in the chat bar so that the attendees can see?
It's easier to read them out and I will type them in for you.
Oh, okay. Well, I put mine in already. I wanted to say about just about teachers. I was really lucky to have a man named Art Goodtimes. It's his real name, Art Goodtimes, who became a poetry mentor for me about 25 years ago. And I came to him with my tight little constricted poems, there was very little body in them. And he said, I wonder what would happen if you relaxed. And that's been one of the best pieces of advice anyone's ever given me about writing. I wonder what would happen if you relaxed. So that when you meet an obstacle, as Bayo is saying, there's a willingness, right? That instead of, oh no, there's an obstacle, what am I gonna do now? And I used to feel that same tightness whenever I would approach a blank page. The blank page itself was actually pretty intimidating, and I was nervous about it. I think partly because I was so concerned about wanting to write something good. I wanted it to be good. And because I wanted it to be good, I couldn't write anything at all. And because it was like a prison for me. And the most gorgeous gift of writing a poem every day was it became incredibly apparent instantly that there was no way for me to write a masterpiece a day. You can't do that. And because of that, I was able to relax, as Art said. It just opened things up in the most beautiful way, and it changed my intention when I sat down to write. Instead of trying to write something good, I realized I'd aspire to write something true. By true, I mean authentic, right? Something that wasn't just clever, no one cares about clever, but something that really spoke to what it is to be alive. And that's a very embodied thing, to understand how it is that, to let the body show up and let that be what's speaking. So I think that those kind of two things together, relaxing and lowering my standards, has been one of the most remarkable gifts for letting poems show up, as opposed to me feeling like I'm the agent, as Bea was saying earlier. It's less about the writer showing up, and it's more about the writer moving out of the way, and as Fred was saying, becoming part of that flow, becoming the wave on the water. Maybe now somebody could say, is there a subject you wouldn't want to write about? That's a great question.
To me, that question would come from my head standing above my process. And I could never intellectually know that until I felt and breathed the poem that I had to write. So, it's not a question I can answer. It comes in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Feels just about right for me as well. It seems like to answer the question would be to put the thing yet to come in a family way, to put it in a business of production values and insist that see beforehand what it wants to be. So yeah, I don't know how to answer that question.
I think that there can be I guess I believe in ripening, that some things that maybe the brain says you should be writing about this, that the body says no. Mm-hmm. Because it does, because it does. I think that I trust that things show up when it's time for them to show up. I think that's kind of what Fred was saying too, that there's a, that ripening process that allows for the moment to meet us and for us to meet that moment, and not a second before, but then when it happens, there's not a damn thing you could do to stop it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like sometimes I just want to write about the color orange. And I find that the color orange is just too much to write about in that moment. And it becomes taboo for me to even lift my pen and attempt to approach this more than human beast or chimeric quality before me. Like, it reprimands my rudeness. How dare you approach me? You know, it's too sacred in that moment to be approached. And yet, if I were to do it in an exam hall or just, you know, off the top of my head, it's easy to do. I guess that's the sense that sometimes the world resists being embraced, you know, embraced in language. It's like an iroko tree in Yoruba culture. There are some trees that do not want to be hugged.
Yeah, that's a really good way of saying it, that there can be a resistance to language sometimes, which is why I think partly too that it's not, you know, when I say that the poem itself isn't the point, it's the wrestling, it's the being wrestled by the moment, and that's the point. That's what I feel like we're really doing, right? Is showing up to be wrestled. Or as you were saying earlier, you know, being slayed. You know, it's that willingness to, it reminded me of what you were saying of the duende, right? The, not like the muse that delicately sits on the shoulder and talks, but more like this force that shreds you. Yeah, welcome back, Brooke.
I was like, and then poetry arrives, and then everything went, all my lights turned off, my computer turned off. That was kind of dramatic. Sorry about that. What did I miss? Can you summarize it? I'm just kidding. What's most alive right now? I heard duende. That's a cool place to be.
Well, Brooke, I'll just say this, that I think you're the glitch, because I also fell out momentarily. The glitch of us disappearing is also poetry. It's not negative space, right? It's also quite alive and brimming with life, you know. So we should learn to honor the glitch as well. Have glitch feminisms.
The poetry of the glitch. I'm just going to title my next book Glitch. And it's funny, Bio, when you said that, everything froze again. So yeah, the tricksters and the wires. Totally. I think we're coming up on the point where the hosts are going to need to say stuff again. And so I'm wondering if any of you have a poem that you'd like to share before we close.
I have a body poem, but I'd love to hear one from the other fellows.
I missed a question, Brooke. You know, what was the question again?
If anyone has a poem they'd like to share.
Okay. Yeah. I'm done. Just want to listen to my sister and brother.
I feel like I've talked enough. And, I'll let the whole blessing of our intention be a prayer and be a poem. and know that we are all breathing together the same breath, and it is laughing in so many forms. 8 billion forms of laughter, one breath.
And I learned last night from Rafe Kelly's session that rats laugh when they play. Rats literally laugh when they play. We can't hear it because it's hypersonic, but if you slow it down, they are laughing. And I am so creeped out by rats. And so that was like a poetic bridge of like, oh, that's kind of cute, even though I'm so creeped out by them. Rosemary, it sounded like a poem was coming for you. That would be
Here's
awesome.
A body poem.
Great.
And I do want to say too, that if anybody else wanted to write a poem, I love Fred's poem so much. And I think to write a genealogy would be a great idea. So it just as a prompt for you in your own writing to do as Fred did and find your greater heritage. What a fabulous, I hope I can write one of those too. This is called 13.7 billion years in the making. Bless the body, its belly of moon, and bless the electric pulse coursing through us that links us back to a bigger bang. Bless each long finger, each stubby toe, the arms for reaching, the legs for dancing, the smooth cupped yes of breast. Bless the tongue for its pink curiosity, and the back of the knee for its vulnerability, and the ornery elbow that knows how to hurt, and the skin that stretches like praise across the living bones. Bless the spine, that sterling strand where desire meets curve. Again, that ornery elbow that knows how to hurt. And what is it in us that knows how to laugh in 8 million different ways? Bless that. And the ridiculous brain that wants to control everything, and the tears that will well up despite the brain reminding us that we come from water, that with every movement of our bodies, we baptize ourselves into this moment, and that gratitude is our birthright.
Thank you.
Thank you, sister.
Thank you. So I'm just gonna turn the video on, quickly jump in here. Thank you all so much. That's been really, really beautiful sharing. It's been amazing. There have been quite a few comments. We don't really have time now to answer all of them, but there's been lots of questions in the chat about the names of the books and the poems and all those sorts of things. So we do have a Facebook group. It's called TEC Dance and Creativity. So obviously any of our panelists are welcome to join, but obviously all of our participants as well in there. I'll try and get as much information as I can and post it in there underneath this session. And my colleague Sandra's just put in links to all of the websites into the chat now, so also you can copy and paste there to get all of the panelists' websites. And just finally, to send a message out to all of our attendees, just to remind you that if you do want to have lifetime access to all of these recordings, including this session, you can upgrade your package for the conference. It is discounted during the length of the conference. It does give you additional things like audio-only options and learning lists and PDF notes and all sorts of things. So you get extra stuff and you can digest all of this in your own time. So we really, really encourage people to do that if you can afford it. And that also helps make it free for those who can't. So really, really appreciate that. Do all of you have one final word, one word, top embodiment word of the day? From each of you.
Dave Rock, I miss you. That was 5.
I'm hungry.
Glitch. I loved glitch.
Spaciousness.
Amazing. Glitch, space, hunger. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We'll wrap up the session now. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, so much.